offer. I'd say about a year. Less for his automatic clearance. Thanks. One more thing. She pulled out her PPC, brought up Ariel Bird's ID photo. Do you recognize this woman? No, I'm sorry. Okay, another one more thing. The other shifts on the desk. I need their names and contacts. Of course. Jonathan, get that information, please. Once she had it, Eve thanked Felicity again before heading out with Peabody. Peabody waited until they were in the car. So, our wit's a suspect. I get that, it's routine. But I don't get why you're narrowing in on her right off. First, it just pisses me off when people lie to me. Eve judged the traffic, zipped out into it. The takeout bag, that holds up. The uniform's confirmed with the security feed. Huffman, no need to run facial recognition now, brought the coffee and muffins at 0720 hours. Yeah, that holds. And the wedding planner deal's gonna hold. We'll check it, but that'll be solid enough. The time might be a little off, but it'll hold. The lawyer fiancé's late legal prep, that'll hold. The rest of it is bullshit. She cut west, then headed south on Lexington. Peabody thought it over. My bullshit detector's pretty good, but I'll cop yours is better. She does the wedding stuff, then goes back to her place. An hour or so later, she decides, hey, I'm bored. She goes out for a 2 or 3 hour hike into the park, window shopping. Does she strike you as an urban hiker, Peabody? Or a woman who window shops all that time and buys nothing? Now that you mention it, not really. I mean, it's plausible. Urban strolling, in her case, head full of wedding plans. Just getting out in the air. But, yeah, a long stretch of it, alone. But she said she was home at the time of the murder. We'll check the feed. But she probably was. Or she'll have come through the lobby and not gone out that way again. She's still a liar. Wherever she was during that 3 hour stretch, it didn't involve urban strolling. Not alone. Cheating on the fiancé. It occurs to me, yeah. Add this. She flicked Peabody a glance. A woman like that doesn't book a sitting at 8 in the morning. She doesn't get there 30 minutes early. People wait for her. That's how it works. You don't like her even a little bit. She's a liar, potentially a cheat. Jury's out on a murderer, but she's checking boxes. She cut west again, thinking it through during the fits and starts of crosstown traffic. She waltzes into the victim's apartment and will establish when you check with the other lobby staff if the victim, her good friend, ever waltzed into hers, starts up the stairs to the studio. Taking time before to buy the takeout, which, yeah, now that you're laying it out, seems off too. That's really early. She spots the body, drops the bag. Splat. Possibly in genuine holy shit. Possibly to establish holy shit. Then she leaves. Backing up? A woman who can afford that apartment would most usually use a car service, but she didn't. She claims she walked around in some sort of fugue state until she hailed a cab. We'll need to track down that cab, Eve added. She gets back, goes up to her place, thinks about taking a sleeping pill. Poor me! Then, finally, more than an hour after seeing her dead friend in a pool of blood, she hits 911. I give you it's a long time, Peabody said as Eve nipped through a yellow light and pushed south again. The line's going to be shock, and how different people experience it. That's not really wrong. She took a shower, changed her clothes, dried her hair, put on very careful makeup. Given the time it took her to get back, she did at least some of that after calling it in. Preparing. No way she went out this morning without doing her face up a lot more than what we saw, her hair up a lot fancier, and she was wearing white, a symbol of innocence. No splatter of coffee on her. And in all that, she contacted the lawyer fiancé. She had the DND to give her more time to prep, to talk to him first, to make sure she had him with her when we interviewed her. She's calculating, Peabody agreed. That sounded loud and clear, especially with the slow, perfect tears. But why go back this morning? Why go back, buy coffee and muffins first, and put yourself in the murder scene? Some people like attention, and I'm betting she qualifies. More, we're going to find her prints on scene, too. Either way, liar, liar, fancy pants on fire. 3. Eve hit the morgue first and started down the long white tunnel. Two techs stood at vending, slurping up bad coffee and replaying the previous night's baseball game. She aimed for the chief medical examiner's domain. His sealed hands smeared with blood, Morris stood over Ariel Bird's body. He wore a clear protective cape over a suit that made her think of ripe peaches. Obviously, in a springtime frame of mind, he'd paired it with a shirt of the palest green and a tie precisely matching the suit. He'd wound his long dark hair into braids, all tied back with pale green cord. It always amazed her, would always amaze her, how anyone managed to coordinate a look so perfectly. He lowered his micro goggles. Young, healthy, and dead on a lovely day in May. I wasn't sure you'd have gotten this far on her yet. Not only your name on her tag, but I recognized hers. Instantly alert, Eve looked into Morris's dark eyes. You knew her? Not personally, not really. I admired her work and spoke to her at last month's Art in the Park Festival. Garnet, her daughter, and I went for a couple of hours. Garnet De Winter, Eve thought, bone doctor, fashion plate, and Morris's pal, platonic. Garnet took her card and visited her home studio. Is that right? She bought a gargoyle for her garden wall. It's charming. Did you go with her to the studio? No. Morris shifted his gaze back to the body. This is my second time meeting the artist. A talented woman. Eve moved closer to study the talented woman who lay on the slab with her chest open. What else can you tell me about her? Healthy, as I said. Good weight for her height and frame, and good muscle tone. A greenstick fracture, left wrist from childhood. A common injury and well healed. No signs of alcohol or illegals abuse. Peabody, he smiled at her. Why don't you get something cold for yourself and Dallas from my box? Thanks. Pepsi? She asked Eve. That'll work. And occupy her, as Peabody disliked open body exams. No defensive wounds, no injuries other than the laceration and contusion on the face from the fall, a cracked rib from an impact injury. Work table. Yes, in studying your crime scene recording, I agree. And of course, the killing blows. More than one. 3. Though the first would have done the job without quick medical attention, the second would have completely sealed the deal. Forceful blows from slightly above and to the right, which knocked her forward and to the left, sharply into the table. She's only 5'3", small stature, slight build. The impact with the table, a solid table bolted down, cracked her lower right rib. She wouldn't have been conscious for the second blow. Delivered as she bounced back from the impact with the table, pitched to her left. The third struck her as she fell. She had a lot of tools, organized. Hammers, chisels, files. It looks to me like the killer picked up the murder weapon from another work table behind the victim, to the right side of the steps going up. Big hunk of rock on it and a chisel. No mallet. Absently, she cracked the tube of Pepsi Peabody handed her. She had company. Either the killer or someone earlier. Someone she shared wine and sex with. Yes, she had about 12 ounces of red wine, a Shiraz, in her stomach contents. Consumed over a period of 3 hours to 1 hour prior to death. She had chicken, rice, Brussels sprouts, about 4 to 4.5 hours prior to death. No wine with dinner. Save the wine to drink with the bedmate. And the sex? Possible DNA? The lab has the fluids to identify DNA. There was no semen in or on her. Condomized. But she didn't have any condoms in her apartment. Eve shrugged as she circled the body again. Not all women do. No sex toys, no condoms, no oral birth control. Internal? Not that I've found as yet. She never gave birth to a child. Okay, this is a good start. I appreciate the quick work. I'm sorry to see such young talent snuffed out, Morris said. Who knows what she might have created in an uninterrupted lifespan? I get what you're thinking, Peabody said when they walked out. What am I thinking? That Gwen Huffman was cheating on her fiancé with the victim. It could play. Side piece way downtown. Keep her out of your neighborhood, your social circle. She knows the fiancé's tied up for the evening, the night. Sitting could be their code for a romp. She doesn't come empty-handed. The wine, the flowers. Huffman's careful. After the wedding planning, she goes home. I bet the security feed's gonna show she changed. Then she doesn't have the doorman get her a cab or call her car service. Doesn't want any possible record of her trip to the West Village. Walks a couple blocks, hails one. Maybe gets out a couple blocks before Bird's place. There you go, Eve agreed. Wine and flowers. We're going to have uniforms check on that because she'd have bought them close to Bird's. Have some wine, Eve continued as they got into the car. Have some sex, some more wine, maybe some more sex. And the fiancé texts! Into it now, Peabody shot up a hand. How are you going to feel when you're all soft and snuggly and the woman all soft and snuggly with you gets a text from her fiancé? Irritated. More irritated, right up to pissed, when your bedmate answers the text, then spends time texting back and forth with you right there. I'm liking this now. I'm seeing this now. Because she did, Peabody wiggled a little in her seat. Bird's like, this is supposed to be our time, but you bring him here? I'm tired of being a convenience to you. And it escalates. Maybe Bird even threatens to tell the fiancé. But if Huffman was home at TOD, it's a fine alibi. It doesn't mean she doesn't know another way out. Fire exit, staff exit. We're gonna check. You're steamed. Eve continued with the scenario. If Bird goes to Kane, it's over. Maybe you can convince him it's a lie or was a mistake, but maybe he calls off the wedding, dumps you. You come home, establish your inn, find a way out again you don't think we'll think of or bother to look for. Go back, go in, because you've got a key card. You've damn well got one. Bash her head in. Then you go back in the morning, pick up the takeout to cover yourself because you've realized you might have left prints. But why don't you get rid of the wine glasses, the sheets? Not as smart as she thinks she is. Eve tapped her fingers on the wheel. Or, in the hard light of day, looking at your dead lover with her head bashed in really does shock you, and you run. Then, because you panicked, you have to cover as best you can. You come up with a plausible story, call 911, and put on a show. It's a good theory. But that's all it is, with as many holes in it as there are in her story. Do a run. See if her prints and DNA are on file. Eve hunted up parking again, this time for the lab, and scored a second-level street spot nearly at the door. A day of miracles. Not if you want her prints and DNA. Which is kind of weird, because both her parents, married 31 years, are doctors. Mother an OBGYN, father a general surgeon. They ought to know better. Parents' prints, not DNA, on record at Mercy Clinic, where they both work. Hold that. Own as well as work, and where all staff are required to have prints on file. Her older sibling, that's Trace Huffman, 29, resides in Vegas, has both his on file due to an arrest for drunken disorderly, underage drinking, and possession of illegals when he was 16. Second arrest at 23 in Vegas for simple assault, bar fight, charges dropped. He goes by Trace D. Huff. He's a musician slash performer slash songwriter. We'll poke at the holes in Huffman's story, Eve said, as they walked into the warren of the lab, and widened them enough to get her prints and DNA. She glanced up the steps that led to De Winter's territory. Take Dickhead. See if he's got anything for us. I don't have anything to bribe him with. Use charm. I'm going up to see if De Winter knows any more about the victim. She found De Winter examining what might have been a tibia from the carefully arranged bones on a work table. She'd contained her hair in a sleek twist and wore short, sparkly dangles at her ears. Her lab coat matched the deep pink tone of her body-skimming dress. Her shoes, a creamy white, boasted deep pink, needle-thin heels. She studied the bone with a magnifier, had started to reach for goggles when she spotted Eve. Dallas? De Winter. They still tended to be wary of each other. Eve figured they probably always would. And what can I do for you? I want to ask you what you can tell me about a victim. De Winter's lips, dyed to match the dress, curved. Got bones? Eve shook her head. Not this time. You know the Vic. Distress flickered over De Winter's face. Who's dead? Ariel Bird. Puzzlement came first. I don't know. Oh, of course. The sculptor. She set the bone down again. I'm really sorry to hear this. How was she killed? Somebody bashed her skull in with one of her mallets. God, people. What they won't do to each other. What can I tell you? I only met her twice. Once at the art festival downtown, and then when I went to her studio to buy a piece I'd seen in her portfolio. What did you talk about? Mostly art. De Winter stepped over to order a bottle of water. Do you want anything? No, I'm good. She was working on a piece, a small one, in the park. That's part of the draw. Seeing artists work, being able to talk to them. My daughter was captivated, had a dozen questions. She, Ariel, was very sweet with my girl. We talked for a bit. Lee was with us, and I skimmed through her portfolio. The gargoyle, limestone, was just what I was looking for my garden. De Winter paused to drink, to think back. I didn't know I was looking for a gargoyle until I saw it, but it was just right. She gave me her card, told me I could get in touch if I decided on it, and come by her studio. She had some pieces in a local gallery, but most at her own place. Do you know the gallery? Let me think. De Winter rubbed fingers on her temple. No, sorry. I'm sure she mentioned it, but I don't remember. Poets and painters? It's street level of her building. Yes, that's right. Another one, too, I think. Anyway, I contacted her a few days later, made an appointment, and bought it directly from her. This saves her the gallery commission. Okay. Anyone else there? No. What else did you talk about? Nothing important. I asked about the types of stone, the tools. She asked what I did, the way you do. She found it interesting, asked some questions. It was all just pleasant. She was pleasant. Oh, I asked if she took commissions, and she said she did. I talked about her doing a statue of my daughter and her dog, and we talked about what medium I might want, talked about our schedules. I was supposed to contact her in a couple of weeks to set it up. She didn't mention anything about friends, other clients, anyone. No. But De Winter held up a finger. She had these gorgeous striped tulips, like candy canes, on her table. When I complimented them, she got that look in her eye. That look? The look you get when you think about a lover. That's how I read it anyway, but she didn't actually say, "Oh, my lover bought me those." Got it. Appreciate it. If I think of anything else. Jesus, Dallas. She was so young. So fresh, I want to say. And just a little thing. I hope whoever gave her those damn tulips didn't kill her. It's where you look first. She made her way downstairs and found Peabody walking her way. My charm's on high today. After a little hip wiggle, Peabody tried a hair toss. Never, never do that again. You're going to want to do the same when I tell you Dickhead already had the sheets done. Two separate DNAs from fluids, both female. One from the victim, one not in the system. Good, solid, but I don't do the wiggle and toss. 'Cause you've got no hips and really short hair, but inside you're wiggling and tossing. No. What about the murder weapon? No prints other than the Vicks because, the experts say, the killer sealed up or wore gloves. Huh. Interesting. Some premeditation in that. Sweeper's got some hair from the sheets and pillowcases, and Harvo's on it. If Harvo's on it, we'll have the results soon. The queen of hair and fiber always came through. We'll take a look at the security feed back at Central. Then you check the alibis, get a couple of uniforms to start looking for likely flower and wine shops. I'll write this up, start the board and book. Once we get that, we're going to want to get whatever other security feed the apartment building has on alternate exits. Cabs? We backtrack from the drop-off. Near or at the coffee place this morning. Near or at the flower or wine place yesterday once we nail that down. Run the fiancé. Let's get a sense. Peabody settled in with her PPC. Merritt Andrew Kane, age 36. Single, no marriages, no official cohabs. Only dings a handful of traffic violations. Harvard Law, like his father, mother, paternal grandfather. And give him a zing, graduated top of his class and clerked for Supreme Court Justice Uma Hager. She glanced at Eve. That's not shabby. Parents married, first and only for both, 42 years. Nice run. Two sibs, one of each, also lawyers, but not in the firm. He's a junior partner at Kane Boswell Kane. Grandfather's the first Kane, dad's the second, and mom's Boswell. He's worth 63 mil, resides Upper East Side about 5 blocks north of his intended bride, and has a second home in Aruba. Eve pulled into the garage at Central, angled into her slot. Why aren't the sibs in the family business? Looking at that, Peabody said, working as she climbed out. The sister, 34, is currently on maternal leave from her position as in-house counsel for Atomic Publishing, offices Lower East, and the brother, 30, is in East Washington clerking for, ha, Uma Hager. Okay, a lawyerly family. They cross the garage to the elevator. Rich, connected. Oldest son hooks up with the daughter of a rich doctorly family. The American dream. Maybe. With some relief, Eve noted the elevator was empty. It wouldn't last, but it was a nice start. The doctorly daughter is a dozen years younger than the lawyerly son. Not enough of a spread to make him a cradle robber, but a spread. He'll make full partner in a 3-generation law firm within a couple years. She socializes, puts in a few hours here and there at her family's charitable foundation, so no apparent career ambitions. When did you run her? When I was going up to talk to De Winter, just a quick one. And here it came, Eve thought, as the doors opened, as cops shuffled in. She put in 3 semesters at NYU and has never worked an actual job. She has an annual income from trust funds that should cover her rent, but probably not much else. At the third stop, Eve muscled off the elevator. I'm guessing her parents supplement her income. Peabody followed Eve to the glides. Their son's off in Vegas, but she's right here. And engaged to the oldest son of a wealthy, prominent New York family. Absently, Eve jiggled the loose credits in her pocket as they rode up. At the tail end of planning what's bound to be a big, splashy society wedding. She sure as hell doesn't want it to come out she's cheating with a moderately successful West Village artist. If it does, it all blows up on her. Still, she's got the trust fund, and her parents are going to be embarrassed, maybe pretty pissed, but would they cut her off for cheating on her fiancé? Is she going to murder her lover over a possible threat to maybe rat her out? You're a homicide detective, Peabody. So you know as well as I do, people kill people over a shoulder bump on the sidewalk. Yeah. And I could see her doing it in a fit of passion, in a moment of heat, but the timelines don't gel. Let's check that first. Go from there. Right now, she's the one with motive, and she's the one lying to the cops. They turned into the bullpen. Jenkinson, his tie du jour, and his partner Reinecke weren't at their desks. Santiago and Detective Carmichael huddled together at hers. Baxter, in one of his slick suits, had his expensive shoes on his desk as he worked his link. And Trueheart, the young and earnest, worked his comp. Since nobody jumped up or hailed her, Eve went straight to her office. Coffee, she said, as she opened the packet from House Royale and took out the disc. "Any way I can program something edible to go with that? My stomach says lunch. I can hit up vending, but..." Eve just waved a hand as she sat, plugged in the disc. Peabody perused the offerings on the Auto Chef menu. "You got everything in here. How about we split a ham and provolone sub? Because it's going to be actual pig meat, actual cheese if it's in here."
"Whatever."
Eve increased the speed of the vid feed until she saw Gwen step out of her apartment into the hall cam range at 11:16. A pale pink dress, a short, three-quarter-sleeved white jacket, high, skinny heels in pink and white stripes, and an enormous pink purse. Eve judged it as meeting with wedding planner attire. She'd done her hair in a loose bun at the nape, wore subtle but impressive jewelry in the diamond studs, a necklace with a pink stone heart outlined in diamonds, a wrist unit with a glittery pink band, a heart-shaped pink stone ring on her right hand, and, of course, her fat diamond engagement ring on her left. "Classic, sophisticated, rich," Peabody said as she set half the sandwich on the desk for Eve, "with a half a side of fries. Real ones." Eve toggled to the elevator feed. They followed her progress down in the elevator, where Gwen smoothed her hair in the mirrored wall, checked her lip dye. A woman with a baby in a stroller got on at 12. Since the woman wore a gray uniform, Eve concluded nanny. Gwen didn't spare either one a glance, then strolled out ahead of them. On the lobby feed, she went straight out the doors.
"She didn't even smile at the baby. And it's a really cute baby."
"Now you don't like her," Eve noted.
"I'm just saying. And I'm also saying this ham is the alt."
Which reminded Eve to pick up her half, take a bite. She couldn't disagree. She stuck with the lobby feed, watched the nanny and baby come out, pause by the desk as Felicity spoke to them, obviously prattled something at the kid, who grinned and waved the rattly thing in his hand. Eve increased the speed until Gwen walked into the lobby from outside at 15:12. She's got a shopping bag. Eve enhanced to home in on the shop's name. Intimate Occasions. Probably sexy underwear. She didn't say anything about shopping, did she?
No, she didn't.
We're going to check when she left the wedding planner, check when she hit the shop, what she bought.
I'll add it to the list. These fries make the ham even more the alt.
Which reminded Eve to eat one. They followed Gwen up the elevator, where she leaned back against the wall of the elevator, smiling smugly, then down the hallway to her apartment. At 17:55, she came out again.
"Freeze it."
Yeah, she changed, but those aren't urban strolling and into the park clothes.
"They wouldn't be mine," Peabody agreed.
Another dress, Eve thought. But this one in hot red with skinny bow straps that showed off the shoulders and a short swingy skirt that showed off the legs. Heels, high again, but these were red like the dress and strappy to show off the pedicure. More hot red. Bold dangly earrings, thick gold cuffs on the wrists, and a gold handbag big enough to hold a toddler. The sophisticated bun had given way to long, shiny waves. The subtle makeup now smoked and smoldered.
"Would you call that date night wear, Peabody?"
"Yeah, I would. And I bet she's got sexy underwear on under that dress."
"Count on it."
"She's bouncing. She's got that I'm gonna get laid bounce to her step."
With a nod, Peabody nibbled on another fry.
McNabb gets sort of a bounce swagger. It's hard to pull off a swagger with his skinny ass, but he does it.
Rather than respond, Eve filled her mouth with ham and cheese.
Here she comes.
Not between 8 and 9. Timestamp 22:11. And moving fast this time, looking pissed.
Definitely pissed, Peabody agreed. Now it's a fuck this shit stride. Her hair's all, I just rolled out of the sexy bed.
She didn't brush it out, and her lip dye's worn off. She'd buy a good one, so that says her mouth did some work. In the elevator, she crossed her arms over her chest, glared straight ahead. At one point, her eyes went glossy with tears, but she tossed her head, pulled them back. She marched to her apartment. Eve didn't need audio to tell her Gwen slammed the door. She ran the feed, kept running it to nearly midnight, but the door didn't open again.
That's well past TOD, Dallas.
Yeah. Eve pushed back. There's always another way out if you want it bad enough. But I don't see her rappelling down the building. Still, I want EDD to look at the feed, see if there are any glitches. Alternately, she could have had it done. I want to see her links. She ate another fry as she started on the morning feed. Here she comes. 0641. Bright and early. And she doesn't have excited face on.
I'd call that determined. You were right about the clothes, the makeup.
Yeah, jeans, spring sweater, hair pinned back at the sides but loose, another enormous bag, low boots, and plenty of careful makeup. In the elevator, she pulled enormous sunshades out of the enormous bag. She checked her wrist unit, tapped her foot. Again, she strode across the lobby without a word or glance. At 0743, she came into the lobby again. Eve slowed speed. She didn't stride, bounce, strut, but walked very deliberately toward the elevator.
Freeze it, Eve ordered, then enhanced.
That's not the face of a woman in shock. Shaken, maybe. A little pale and shaken, but thinking, calculating. She figured out what to do on the ride back uptown. In the elevator, Gwen pulled off the sunshades, rubbed a hand over her heart. Eve froze and enhanced again. Pupils aren't dilated. No zoned out look in them, no trembling, not fucking shock. She's upset, but the rest is bullshit. In the hallway, she quickened her pace, hurried to her apartment and inside.
That's a lot of lies, Peabody commented.
Yeah, a whole basket of lies. We'll be bringing her in. But let's get it all lined up first. Start on that list. I'll copy and send the feed to Feeney and put the board and book together.
On it. She didn't come out again on the night of the murder, Peabody added. But what are the odds somebody walked in that apartment and bashed Bird's head in an hour or so after she and Huffman had a fight?
They improve if Huffman asks somebody to take care of it for her. She strikes me as the type who gets people to take care of things.
4.
Eve set up the board first. She wanted the visual. She read the initial reports, sweepers, lab, ME, added them and the reports from the uniforms into her notes, into her murder book. She wrote her report, then opted to copy Mira. The expert profiler might give her more insight into a person like Gwendolyn Huffman if and when she needed it. She'd just begun a deeper dive into Gwen's background when she heard the clip coming down her hall. Not Peabody's clomp, uniform shoes. She glanced around as Officer Shelby started to rap her knuckles on the door jamb.
Sorry to interrupt, Lieutenant. Detective Peabody's holding on her link and asked me to relay the officers in the field located the flower vendor and the wine shop regarding your current investigation.
Great.
She saw Shelby's eyes track to her board. Not surprising. What surprised her was the way Shelby's eyes widened.
Problem, Shelby?
No, sir, Lieutenant. It's just... I know her.
You knew my victim?
No, sir, I don't believe so. I knew Gwen. Gwendolyn Huffman.
You have her boarded as prime suspect.
How do you know her?
Eve had picked Shelby for homicide because she judged her as solid. Nothing until now had changed that opinion. Before Eve could speak again, she watched Shelby square herself.
Knew her is more accurate than no, sir. I haven't had any contact with her since we were, 15. I was 15. I think she was, or maybe 16. I'm sorry, Lieutenant. I'm sorry, sir. I'm a little thrown off.
Clearly, Eve decided, and gestured Shelby inside.
How did you know her?
My uncle has a beach house in the Hamptons. He won the lottery.
You're shitting me.
No, sir, Lieutenant.
A smile came and went. 65 million. Back when I was about 11 or 12. He opened a restaurant there, too, and still works as a chef.
That's what he did.
Does. He's a chef, but he has his own place now. He has us up every summer, the whole family. For 2 weeks, or as long as we can manage.
Gwen's family has a house there, too, and spent most of the summer there. So we met when I was about 13, I guess.
Shelby cleared her throat, looked back at the board. Our brothers hung out. My brother was a couple years younger than hers, but they both played guitar, so they hung out, tried writing songs together. I know her brother plays clubs and sessions in Vegas because he's still in touch with mine.
But you're no longer in touch with the sister.
No, sir.
Because?
Shelby blew out a breath. The summer I was 15, Gwen and I got to be more than friendly.
Okay. Eve rose, moved around Shelby to close the door.
Have a seat. Watch your ass, that chair bites. How do you take your coffee?
Black is fine. Black is good.
I appreciate it, sir.
Eve programmed coffee, considered her officer.
Shelby sat very straight. She'd done something with her hair. Dashed blonde through the brown. People were always doing things like that.
She wore it short, shorter than Eve's own, and it suited her young, pretty face.
Not a face so earnest and green as Trueheart, said Ben, when Eve had brought him into homicide.
No, Shelby had more edge to her.
Eve handed her the coffee, took her own back to her desk, sat.
Your private life is your own, Shelby, but any insight you can give me into Gwendolyn Huffman will aid our investigation. The victim, an artist, a sculptor, had the back of her head caved in with one of her own mallets. This occurred shortly after, evidence shows, she and Gwen had sex in the victim's bed. Further evidence leads us to believe they had an argument.
I never knew Gwen to be violent, sir. Not like that. Bitchy, demanding, manipulative, yeah.
She called 911 from her apartment on the Upper East Side. We have her statement, and the evidence supports that she traveled down to the victim's apartment / studio this morning very early. She claims she had an 8 o'clock sitting for a statue for her future husband. She arrived considerably before 8, claimed the victim's door was unsecured, and she went inside, found the body, then, due to shock, left, went back uptown before she gathered herself to call it in. More than an hour after she found the body. Shelby took a moment, sipped at her coffee. I think her statement is probably inaccurate on several points.
Hey, me too.
Her brother's estranged from her and his parents, but he still gets bits now and then, and tells my brother, who tells me. I knew she was engaged. A lawyer, wealthy family. Unless she's dramatically changed, money and social status are very important to her. She wouldn't want her other relationship to come out. Her parents are very strict and conservative. It's more than that. Shelby paused, drank more coffee. Unless that's changed too. They belong to a group called Natural Order. Now Eve sat up straight. Those people are crazy.
Yes, sir, Lieutenant.
I completely agree. It's not what you'd call a church, though they managed to get that status, but they sure do preach. No mixed or same-sex marriages or relationships. Outlaw licensed companions, take women's reproductive rights back a couple centuries. No method of birth control but abstinence, and absolutely no premarital sex.
Didn't they buy their own country or something?
Sort of, an island. People, rich ones like the Huffmans, helped finance that.
Gwen's parents? If they knew she was seeing another woman?
Shelby shook her head, drank more coffee. When I was 15, sir, I knew my orientation. My parents, my brother, my sister, my family, they all knew. It was just who I was, no issue.
Gwen's, on the other hand, were of a different mindset.
A different century?
Yeah, you could say.
Gwen and I got involved that summer. She made the moves, only because I was too shy. We'd sneak out at night. That my parents wouldn't have approved of, and were together. I was just crazy about her. She's beautiful and smart and, well, adventurous, at least back then. So into the second week of my stay, somebody told her parents. At least that's what I think, what her brother thought.
What did they do?
They left. Just left. I got a text from her saying we were done. Like, bitch, we're over.
Nice. Nothing else?
No, sir. I tried texting her back, but they didn't go through. I knew where she lived in the city, where she hung out. I haunted those places for the rest of the summer just to talk to her, to figure out why she dumped me that hard. But I didn't see her again until right after school started. She went to private school uptown, and I saw her coming out of the building. When she saw me, she, well, basically, she told me to fuck off, stay the hell away from her. I'd ruined her whole summer, but I wasn't going to ruin her life.
Broke my heart. How's it doing now?
Oh, it healed up a long time ago. But you don't forget your first. And you don't forget when that person turns on you that way. She meant what she'd said. I'd ruined her summer. That's all it was to her. All I was. I got over it. She blew out another breath. The thing is, Lieutenant, I know you can look through hard eyes at 15, but we had feelings for each other. It wasn't just sex, but she cut those feelings off. She did the same with her brother. Appearances in her world, her parents' world, their priority.
She wouldn't be the first to kill to maintain appearances.
No, sir, but she's more likely to lie. She's really good at it, or was. I'm betting she's even better at it now. practice usually does that. And she knows how to play the victim. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's hard for me to see her picking up a hammer and caving in a skull. That's messy. She'd use tears, manipulation, charm, lies to get around anything, anyone.
Okay, Shelby. This is helpful.
Shelby rose. I want to say her brother, he's a good guy. He took off right after that summer. Maybe during it. They cut him off, sir, in every way. Financially, at least according to him, they put blocks on his trust funds. But more than that, they just cut him off, forgot him. He doesn't exist. Not to them, not to Gwen. There's a coldness in that. It's in her, too.
Are you going to have a problem if I put any of this into my report?
No, sir, Lieutenant, none at all. I'm a cop. Anything I can do to aid your investigation, I'll do. No question, no problem.
You're a solid cop, Shelby. That's why I brought you into homicide.
Thank you, Lieutenant. Can I ask if you'll keep me apprised of the situation when it's appropriate?
Already planning on it.
If you need time to settle. No, sir, I'm fine.
Good. Ask Peabody to come in. And if she hasn't yet sent uniforms to House Royale, Huffman's residence, to obtain any security feed on staff and service exits, alternate exits, you and Officer Carmichael head uptown and take care of that. See Felicity on the desk.
Yes, sir.
When she reached the door, Shelby hesitated, turned back.
Lieutenant, I don't want to be a suck-up, but I want to say, I'd have related all of this information to any primary investigator or supervisor, but I wouldn't have been as comfortable doing so with anyone else. Thanks for the coffee.
Eve sat a moment, digesting all of it, then began to write it up. She continued working when she heard Peabody's boots clomp in the hallway.
I started to come back before, but your door was closed.
That's right. Shelby had some information and insight on Huffman.
No shit. She knows Huffman?
Knew is more accurate. Close the door. Intrigued, Peabody closed the door. She contemplated the visitor's chair and opted to stand. I'm writing it out, but quickly. Shelby and Huffman had a brief but intense romantic relationship when they were teenagers. Eve stopped, swiveled in her chair. Huffman's parents found out, likely from some weasel, and broke it up. The parents are part of natural order.
Jesus, those people are
lunatics, Eve finished. Bigoted asshole lunatics. The thing is, Shelby sought out Huffman back in New York and got kicked hard to the curb. Meanwhile, Huffman's brother was and is friendly with Shelby's. They stay in touch. Huffman not only kicked Shelby, but, along with her parents, cut off the brother.
Cold.
Cold's one word for it. Shelby's take is, while she doesn't see Huffman as violent, she is, confirming my take, an inveterate liar, manipulative, a status seeker. I'm adding to that. This is a woman without loyalty or genuine emotion. I'm going to share all this with Mira, get her opinion. Peabody eased a hip on the corner of the desk.
Someone with those qualities could, on impulse or out of self-preservation, kill, and without much remorse, if any. But,
yeah. But current evidence indicates Huffman was tucked up in her apartment at the time of the murder. New information, however, tells us the Huffmans are part of the whacked fringe group Natural Order, members of which have been known to use violence.
The group leadership disavows violence, Peabody added. But,
yeah, but again, the violence happens.
Huffman's pissed, slams out of Bird's apartment. Maybe she doesn't secure the door. Maybe being pissed, knowing Bird could threaten her cushy life and splashy wedding, she contacts someone she knows is capable of violence, of murder. Possibly she spins them a story. She'd be good at it. Or possibly she tells them the truth, depending on her connection with this person.
I'm liking this.
Eyes on the board, Peabody nodded. What if she contacts someone, spins that story, a little weepy, a little desperate, and asks them to go put a scare into Bird, threaten her so she'll back off?
Not bad, Eve considered. It could tie in with her going back in the morning.
Lattes and muffins. Let's make up. Let's be friends. Sees the body. Realizes things went too far. Now she has to figure out how to get herself out of it, how to manipulate the situation so she's just an innocent bystander. We've got her on her relationship with Bird. I bet it's her DNA on the sheets, her prints.
And pubic hair, Eve added. Harvo came through.
So did the uniforms, Peabody added. We have her buying the wine, the flowers, 2 blocks from Bird's residence, when she claims to have been urban strolling uptown. The statements from both vendors who ID'd her is she comes in at least once a week, always pays cash.
She doesn't want a paper trail.
But she had to cobble all this together fast. She didn't have time to polish all the details.
She's in this, Peabody. Maybe she swung that mallet, maybe not, but she's in this.
Want me to have her picked up?
Eve shook her head. Let's play it this way. Contact her. She'll remember you as sympathetic. Request she come in to sign an official statement. Let it slip we're looking at this as a botched burglary. That'll take the pressure off her, so she may not knee-jerk into tagging her fiancé. And he can't spend all day with her if he's prepping for a court case, can he?
Which he is, that's confirmed. He and 5 others worked in the conference room at the law firm until after midnight. Nobody left. They ordered food in, twice, and the wedding planner confirms the meeting with Huffman. They met about 11:30, parted ways about 1:45.
Which gave Huffman plenty of time to shop for sexy underwear.
A merry widow. That's a kind of corsety thing. White silk with red rose accents, matching G-string, and a bottle of their Allure Me perfume. Time-stamped receipt, totaling $3,800 and change at 1447. She charged it.
Oh, Peabody added. She's a regular.
Contact her. I'm looking forward to watching her try to swim through her sea of lies.
Peabody pushed off the desk.
On it. You know, Dallas, it couldn't have been easy for Shelby to tell you all that really personal stuff.
She stands up.
Agreed.
And I'm just saying, I love her new do.
Do what?
Hair, Dallas. The pixie do with the highlights. It's a good look for her, but then it would be. She went to Trina.
Trina? How does a uniform with barely 2 years on the job afford Trina?
Trina gives a cop discount.
Trina gives...
Eve thought of the thoroughly terrifying Trina.
Seriously?
Yeah, a solid 20% discount at her salon for cops. She started it after the Ziegler investigation last December.
Peabody flipped at her own red-streaked curls.
She said cops, us, stood up for her and her good friend Seema, so she was standing up for cops and making sure they looked damn good. Since Shelby was in on that in the end,
Copley resisted and clocked her, remember?
Yeah.
Trina gave her the new do on the house.
Peabody went out, leaving Eve frowning after her. A person could be loyal, she thought, even generous, and still be pushy, bossy, scary. She figured that wrapped Trina up in a bow, and, putting it aside, went back to work. As she read over her report to refine it, an incoming interrupted. She saw Feeney's name, answered.
Dallas. Shuffled your shit in, he told her. No glitch on the security feed. What you see is what was what.
Damn it. He gave her a half-ass smile. He had a hangdog face with baggy basset hound eyes. His silver-threaded ginger hair exploded over it. She caught herself wondering if he took advantage of Trina's 20%.
Bat 500, you're a baseball star. I can give you the 500.
Victim's door.
Yup.
Something rustled, then he popped a candied almond in his mouth.
Not tampered with, but bullshit on the unsecured. Keycard used to open it at 0718.
About 4 minutes after Huffman bought the takeout.
If you say.
Last keycard use prior, 2246.
Is that so?
Eve narrowed her eyes on her board and the TOD of 2248.
Is that fucking so?
It's fucking so. Same card. Can you tell?
I can tell you it wasn't Huffman's original.
Copy used, but I can't tell you if it was one copy or two copies. Might be able to if you get us the copy or copies.
He ate another almond.
That's a might be.
I'll take a might be.
I got McNabb going over the Vic's link, her comp. Nothing much popping right now. She's got art and business stuff on the comp and a calendar. She's got some of the dates marked with a little red heart, including last night.
I could use those dates. I'm bringing a suspect into the box. I'll tell him to send them.
Appreciate it, Feeney. She got up to study the board, make some additions. Once again, an incoming interrupted. This time, she saw Julie Bird on the readout. The mother, the next of kin, Eve hadn't been able to reach to inform.
Hell.
She went back to her desk, answered, Lieutenant Dallas.
Yes, yes, this is Julie Bird.
The woman, an older version of her daughter, looked deliriously happy.
I had a voicemail from you on my link. I completely forgot my link this morning. My daughter-in-law went into labor, and we all just rushed out to the birthing center. Such an exciting day. I just got back to my son's house. He'll be bringing Allie and our gorgeous Fiona, 7 pounds, 3 ounces, and 18 inches of perfect, home in a few hours. I came back to get everything ready for the homecoming and saw my link sitting on the kitchen counter.
Ms. Bird.
Yes? Oh, I forgot to stop and buy flowers.
With a laugh, the woman tapped the flat of her hand against the side of her head.
I need to run out and do that.
Ms. Bird, I'm very sorry. I have some difficult news.
Oh, nothing's difficult on this day. Not after watching that precious life come into the world.
I'm afraid it is. It's about your daughter, Ariel.
I regret Ariel. Lucas, my son, said he'd contact her when I realized I didn't have my link. She is going to be so excited. She's an aunt.
Never easy, Eve admitted. Notification shouldn't be easy, but some were worse than others. Ms. Bird, I regret to inform you your daughter, Ariel Bird, was killed last night. I'm very sorry for your loss.
What? That's a terrible thing to say.
I'm hanging up. Ms. Bird, I'm Lieutenant Dallas of the New York Police and Security Department. I'm the primary investigator on your daughter's murder.
Murder?
No one would murder Ariel. You can't mean any of this. The screen blurred, then cleared again. Eve realized the woman had dropped down to sit on the floor. I'm very sorry. What happened to my baby? What happened to my girl? There were times you didn't lay the details on top of the weight. We're investigating. I know this is difficult, but if you could answer some questions, it would help us find the person who hurt your daughter.
I don't understand. Who would want to hurt her? She never hurts anyone. She's an artist. She works to bring joy and beauty into the world.
Do you know of anyone she had an issue with? Anyone who threatened her or she argued with?
No, no, no. She's so involved with her work. I tell her she should go out more, have fun. But her work is her passion, her joy, her fun.
What about romantic attachments? The image on screen swayed as Julie began to rock herself.
I know she's been seeing someone for several months now. I don't know who. Ariel's very private. But I know the woman she's involved with makes her happy. It frustrates her sometimes, but that's love. It can be frustrating. And she's so young and so talented. So much left to do and experience.
The tears came now in a flood.
Oh God, my baby. I have to come home to my baby. I'm in Atlanta. My boy lives in Atlanta, and I'm here to help with...
Ms. Bird. Julie, I can assure you we're doing our best for your daughter. That